MLW Radio. Now, your host, Mr. St. Laurent, Court Bauer, and Conan.
Orgullosamente Latino hasta la muerte y después. Worldwide Latino pride, the ambassadors of violence. K-Dog is free.
A new era is officially underway here at the MLW Radio Network as we usher in the summer. Welcome to the flagship. Going strong since 2011, this is MLW Radio. I'm Court Bauer, joined by the man who has held AWA Gold longer than Nick Bockwinkle, Mr. St. Laurent. Conan might possibly be joining us later, but let's not let that get in the way of the dramatic past 48 hours where the WWE Championship flip-flopped like a fish out of water, only to be outdone by Roman Reigns being suspended for 30 days for violation of the WWE wellness policy. MSL, your fast take on this news.
It's crazy, man, and I'm sure we'll dig into Extreme Rules and Raw a little later into the show. But just on the surface, like, to me, if this doesn't finally lead to a heel turn, I don't know what will. It's so desperately needed. I've ranted and raved about it like a lunatic for months, if not years at this point. And, you know, it's the timing is so clever for them that he doesn't even have to miss the pay-per-view. You just keep him off TV for a couple of weeks. But, man, if he's supposed to be like the hero for the children and he's popped on a drug test, how do you not finally turn the guy?
And before I continue any further, Conan is on with us, my man from Iran. We're talking about Roman Reigns. He was just suspended for 30 days for violation of the wellness policy. And I look at it as an opportunity for WWE to take a few steps back, reexamine what they're going to do with the draft, and what they're going to do on the flip side with Roman Reigns going into SummerSlam, because I think it's great not to have that three-way at Battleground. I feel like you were jumping ahead. It's better to do the rematch or a match that didn't take place with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins at Battleground and then do the triple threat, which is big for SummerSlam. That, to me, is more logical booking. But the houses haven't been what they had hoped for Roman Reigns on top as your top babyface 1A star, your champion. Ratings haven't been great. Dean Ambrose winning the championship. The ratings were up 17% from last week's Raw, which is an interesting indication. Of course, a big title switch tends to pop the ratings. But what's your fast take?
No competition from the NBA.
Oh, that doesn't hurt. What's your fast take, Conan, on Roman Reigns and this wellness suspension? We don't know what he was popped for. We don't know any of those details. This just broke before we started recording. But what do you think? What do you do with Roman Reigns when he comes back? Keep him babyface, or do you finally flip
the
switch?
Oh, come on, yeah. Softball. He has to come back because the heel just destroying everything in his fucking path.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean,
And let me just add this one last thing. Yeah. Bro, I mean, I don't understand. I always, like, when I talk with you guys, I always think, fuck, if me, Em, and fucking Court were booking a place with some other people, I know we could do a better job than these guys who have all these brilliant minds all around them. So I don't know. I almost feel like everybody – I almost think – tell me, Court, if you think there might be some validity to this. I almost feel like – kind of everybody might feel the same way, but when it gets blocked either with Vince or with Hunter, and then things are then done the way they want. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, I look at Roman Reigns, and he's someone that they had factored into the big picture, in the main event picture, for the last 2 years, and they were trying to groom him. WrestleMania 31 in San Jose, we saw that as they put him against Brock Lesnar, and then called it audible and said, let's reassess, let's take a step back and maybe get some momentum going for Roman Reigns and correct the course over the next 12 months going into WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. And they give him the title. He's had a few title runs now, and which is kind of crazy to hot potato the title that many times. But also, you know, he's now a former champion, and everyone wants to boo him. By design, how they booked that promo with Dean Ambrose, it really kind of furthered that cause rather than try to correct the course for Roman.
Do you think design, or do you think they don't know any better?
Can I say one more thing, please, real quick? As you were talking, I was actually thinking of this in my head. Can you imagine with that tremendous dynasty and pedigree, if all the Hawaiians and Samoans from Afa and Sika and everybody, Rick, Yokozuna, everybody, just gathered around him, and they're going crazy, and that's not the Samoan way and all this. And, bro, all of a sudden, he just hauls off, and he hits off or something, you know, boom, off of Junior. And the next week, he leaves Rikishi laying, and The Rock comes in. He leaves that motherfucker laying. You've created yourself a monster.
I think he has a lot of potential as a top heel, and it's just a little quick fact on Roman. He's one of the very few Anuais or Fatus or Samoans from that dynasty, that big extended family tree, that actually wasn't trained by the family. He was trained down in Tampa by WWE Developmental, so doesn't have the same kind of style as most of the Samoans do. And it's crazy because most Samoans start training and just they're, you know, by osmosis, they're around it at a young age. I mean, I've seen 3-year-olds do backflips off the top rope. I mean, they could barely, you know, do much other than walk and talk, and they would be able to kind of run the ropes and hit the corners and everything. But
Roman, do you think him, if what I was just saying, if him turning on that whole Samoan clan would get him just incredible heat?
I think it could. The thing I was just about to say about Roman Reigns is his real game plan was to go to the NFL. He was successful in college. He wanted to progress to the pros, but that didn't work out. So his plan B was wrestling, but he was so focused growing up in Pensacola on the football end that he really didn't look to the wrestling end. And that's why, you know, you ask people, ask, well, why wasn't he trained by the Samoan family, by Sika, et cetera? It's because he was so focused on the gridiron than the square circle. And that's why when he went to Tampa, he was basically first day on the job, whereas a lot of the other guys, they're just doing it at such a young age. So I think
now, before that, M was asking something to you about if you thought that was by design or not, right?
Yeah, the segment on Monday, and another thing too, and I'd like both of your guys' take on this. To me, it's so obvious that Roman is missing just a lot of that natural main event instinct. Like, the crowd really gets to him. You can see the nerves in his face. Cena's good at playing it off, but Roman always bites. And I really think it kind of jobs him out that he's showing to the crowd that the crowd is getting to him in that way. He doesn't have that main event poise at all.
Yeah, bro, it's a tough position, man, to be hearing you're the man and you're the man, and then when you go out there, the people turn on you, and then reading shit and hearing shit, and when you get out there in front of those cameras and the pressure, and you know that every day that you're not over, it's just building, bro. It'll rattle just about anybody, especially somebody like him that's kind of just breaking in. He ain't like a seasoned veteran that could be like, you know what I'm saying, and he has let him rattle him.
Well, looking at Money in the Bank, it was a real fun show, especially at the top. I thought the last three matches were tremendous. They really delivered. AJ and John Cena really hit a homer on that one. The Money in the Bank match was really good. I was a little surprised because, you know, you have some guys a little bit older in there, but they did a really good job in that match, and it was a lot of fun to watch. It was a spectacle like it always is. And then the main event, you had Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, and Seth wins, only for Dean Ambrose to quickly cash in the Money in the Bank briefcase, which he had just won, and beats another member of the Shield in Seth Rollins and takes the title, and that sets everything in play for what would be Battleground that's coming up next month, which will presumably be just a one-on-one match, which is, I think, again, the organic approach to this. But just talking a little bit about the Money in the Bank match, ADR got injured in the Money in the Bank match. People thought it was a lot worse than it is. I spoke with the man himself. He hurt his knee, just tweaked a little bit from taking a bump in that final sequence of the finish.
Wait, you actually heard words out of his mouth?
Oh, I have more, in fact. I know, right? He's an apparition. Much. He did actually physically, on the phone, appear. But I spoke with him. He's fine, just a minor thing, but they did keep him off Raw, which I think is a smart move. You know, if you don't need to do someone that got a little dinged up, then why do it? But that Money in the Bank ladder match is a son of a bitch. And while talking about Alberto Del Rio, another story broke was about Paige, and there were some reports about something happening to her later in the evening after Money in the Bank. And I actually spoke to ADR and got the 411. He is dating her. He was there at the scene. And I can kind of fill you in on what happened. Basically, they went after Money in the Bank to a show in Las Vegas. Absinthe, I think, is what the name of the show was. I might be butchering it. It's quite possible. And they were having a good time watching the show, and there was this drunk couple that started heckling them and kind of taunting them, saying they were fake wrestlers and what is this bullshit with them here, and really became distraction and was really inappropriate. So Alberto called over the security and asked for them to be escorted out, the couple that was harassing them. They removed the couple in question, and Alberto and Paige went on to enjoy their evening. When the show let out, waiting on the other side of the doors was the couple that had been ejected, that was heckling them and being rude and distracting. And they all had words. And Paige was accosted. And then the police came. And like any kind of situation like this, when that occurs, they basically – they get everything stabilized. And that includes, you know, handcuffing the people and then questioning them and seeing what the hell transpired. Paige was then put in the ambulance briefly just to make sure she was okay. You know, she had been attacked. And so they just wanted to make sure she was good. She was. She was good to go. She was not arrested. She was not in any way put in under surveillance or anything. She's in tip-top shape mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. They made their way down to Phoenix the next day. She wrestled on Monday Night Raw. They talked with the powers that be. The powers that be said, yeah, you did the right thing. Glad nothing happened. And that's why she went on like nothing had happened, because it's just one of those weird things that can happen to wrestlers. It's something that you talk to the old school wrestlers that were in the territories. They would constantly be challenged about legitimacy of being a wrestler, and they'd have to, you know, put down a few people in the process. This was a little different. They were accosted, and it's an unfortunate situation, but she's good to go, and he's good to go, and I just wanted to share that story here, I guess, an MLW Radio exclusive. But one other thing I want to mention about Money in the Bank while we're talking about another exclusive was that Wale and our boy Spiff were actually sitting ringside next to Titus O'Neil's kids, and rumor has it they almost got involved with an angle, but didn't happen. I guess maybe they were going to defend the honor of Titus O'Neil's kids against Rusev.
Why does WWE love to do these angles that bury people? They push that he's the father of the year, mm-hmm. and what a great story it would be for him to win a championship on Father's Day instead of in front of his kids. And instead, they love to set up what would be these feel-good moments just to fuck you. Like, why push that he's the
heat.
Father of the year if he's going to lose on Father's
but
Day?
But that's heat. And then he taunted them afterwards. I would say that was actually the right thing to do in that case, because Rusev is the bigger star. He is the guy. If you're going to pick between the two, that's the guy I would pick to continue to pour heat on and make a bigger deal would be Rusev. I think he's the money. He's the younger guy. He has the more upward mobility. He's got more breakout potential. He needs to be rebuilt. Titus O'Neil doesn't have those qualities. Titus O'Neil, all due respect, is a very serviceable talent, but to me the money's on Rusev.
But their idea of heat is to just always fuck everyone always, and since the audience has been trained now to never get the moment of glory, I don't think the heat works, because they've just done this so many times, and we've seen it, you know, everybody being buried in their hometown, or now we're burying basically every father. We're shitting on Father's Day. It's just very strange, the mentality they have. They seem to just get off on shitting on people, and they've never understood, at least in the last 10 years or whatever it's been, they seem like almost like allergic to the moment that the people actually want.
Play this thought out in this particular piece of business that I feel strongly about. You wanted Titus to go over?
I wouldn't have put Titus in that match in that day.
So who is Rusev? I mean, Rusev is the guy they're pushing. Is there someone that's a better option to beat?
You could have programmed Rusev with anyone. I'm just saying, to me, the flaw in the logic is to push Titus as Father of the Year.
Titus O'Neil. I mean, what's Father of the Year? Is it a championship? It's a gimmick that gives you something to identify him, gives you a little emotional investment, and then you cash it in. You beat him. Then Rusev keeps on moving down the road. The problem I have is if you get that heat, and you don't move on down the road, and you do parody booking, and you blow it off in 24 hours. That's where it becomes a problem. You invest all that, you get a payoff, and then you blow it off. That's the disconnect I would have in that situation.
It really reminded me of at WrestleMania when Zack Ryder won by surprise, and the people were with it. It was a feel good moment, and then the next night they just shit all over him to push Miz, who's going nowhere anyways. And I just it seems to me there's so few legitimate feel-good moments on the shows. And now you're going to have 2 hours of SmackDown on Tuesdays. You're going to have double pay-per-views apparently twice a month. And just how many hours of your life are you devoting to this product to be made to feel good so few times. I just think the ratio is lopsided.
Some promotions have always booked with a lot of heat. And you oppress the babyface and you wait and then you cash in that one moment so they get their one win. Tommy Dreamer, Paul Heyman poured tons of heat on that deal. He got beat more than he won. And he was like the diehard. He always would call him, you know, Bruce Willis from Die Hard. He's just, you're oppressing the baby face. There's other promotions like WWF in the 80s.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing. Let me just say something real quick. And even in that feud, I remember he didn't beat Raven for like a year.
Right.
Maybe but longer, yeah.
Here's the thing, bro, and this is what always gets me. We always go back to the same thing. I always say it's incredible that the same people that will write a great show every now and then write so terribly the rest of the year. And again, I almost go back to the thing, is it almost like a system within them that, you know, because the writing hasn't gotten better. The difference between what Paul Lee did and how WWE does it is, you know, Paul Lee always had you invested. He just wrote brilliantly, bro. And these people here, I don't know, the way they write, I do think M in a way has a point. It's very lopsided, you know, and they do a lot of stupid shit. And it almost seems like the writing has gotten worse, not better. I think writing was better back in the day.
It's a continuity thing. Like I was saying, the WWF, the philosophy from the 60s, 70s, 80s was always a strong baby face, and you always are feeding him heels. You do your set of heat, and then the baby face would always look good. Your baby face was your top baby face in WWF. WWF was always walking tall, whereas Ric Flair and all the heels from the NWA, the baby face was constantly chasing. It was a different dynamic with a lot of heat. So it was just conceptually, it was different. The current problem is that they do a lot of 11th hour radical revamps of the script. Yeah. And so you lose continuity. You're digesting 3 hours of new content, and you're forgetting what you just banged out the following week or prior week. And so it's just a continuity thing, and I think that's probably the culprit for what's happening and what you're talking about and what you're talking about and criticizing Conan. I think it's just when you do it day of and you're in the trenches and you have all these people in this vacuum, it's so hard to look through it all and cleanly remember what were you doing the last few weeks? What are we doing tomorrow? Because now everything's just been blown up, and now we got to book multiple dozens of segments for a 3-hour show, and then remember how it all fits together for the next pay-per-view, the next network exclusive. So that's the difference, is that even in my time on the creative team, you would make a slight adjustment. Maybe you change a main event or who was in a trios or a six-man match from the main event or something like that. Maybe one guy would be traded out or something. But the overall DNA of that show was pretty much intact 7 out of 10 weeks. Very rarely would we blow up an entire show that to that extent that it happens now with great regularity. That you really – I think it's just a problem, and that now trickles down. It trickles down to continuity, quality control, matchmaking, those little nuances you're talking about, Em, about why would you do that with Titus O'Neil. It takes its toll, and that's a philosophical thing, and it starts with the chairman. But that's what he wants, and how he wants to go through his creative process, for better or for worse.
Because I agree with you 1,000% that Rusev has the more upside. I'm not saying put Titus over on Rusev, and people know I'm high on Titus. It's just he's been jobbed for so many years; it's very limited what you can do. But here's what I would have done: you give Titus the win, not against Rusev, against anybody else. Give him a nice win on the pay per view. It's Father's Day; he celebrates with the kids. I want the feel good moments on my pay per views. And then the next night, maybe you do an interview with him. His kids are in the ring; he's feeling good. And now Rusev punks him out in front of his kids, lays him out. So to build to Rusev beating Titus, when Titus at least means like a sliver of something, maybe the match with them is live on Raw on the 4th of July. Titus is going to try to win the title, the U.S. title, win it from the evil foreigner on the 4th of July, because it's a Monday this year. And then Rusev wins that match. And now there's real heat on the TV show. But at least you built Titus up a little bit first, whereas right now this angle to me seems so strange. If Titus has been a jobber and he's just thrown into this feud with Rusev basically for no reason. So I don't think it's helping Rusev unless you build Titus first.
Conan, what do you prefer as a booker? To book a babyface chasing and pour a ton of heat in this scenario, or do you like to have a top babyface standing tall and feeding him heels constantly? What do you subscribe to as a booker?
It just depends who you're working with, man. They both work, and I've done great business with both. With a huge baby face, you know, whether it was ADR, mm-hmm. you know, or we did tremendous stuff when we had heel champions where I was just, you know. So either one, it just depends right. who it is. I love both, but if you have the right person, you know, it's just great. But one thing I would say, Em, about it jobs them out so bad. But if you had somebody, like what I would do is like have somebody the next day, you know, Rusev did what he had to do. He has to continue walking his trek. You get another guy, whoever it is. It seems like for whatever reason, Dolph Ziggler has heat again. So, you know, Dolph Ziggler went, but is Ziggler a face, right?
Yes.
He's a face, all right. Well, either him or some other fucking heel, you know, goes up to him and just punks him out. I go, Father's Day, what a disgrace. You got beat in front of your kids on Father's Day. And, you know, and just put – and making fun of him and fucking, you know, O'Neal explodes. And you could heat him up and keep him going a little bit and give him a win and do something with him. But it almost feels like, you know, they're telling us once again, we have nothing to do with Titus. We don't really give a shit about him. And so you as a fan go, then why should I give a shit about him? Because obviously you guys aren't going to, you know, at least have us invested. And that's one thing that I did like a lot of like, you know, back in the 90s, you know, when Russo was there, that from top to bottom, they took care of everybody. Paulie did the same thing from top to bottom. Everybody meant something. And I always tried to, you know, do something with people from the top to the bottom.
Okay, one last question about Money in the Bank. I don't know if you guys noticed this the convoluted tag team title match that they had. I don't know who the agent of this match was or why it was arranged in this way. I actually literally timed it with a stopwatch. The Bullet Club hit their finisher on a member of the Vaudevillains, and the member of the Vaudevillains has to lay there for 28 seconds without taking another move to then get pinned by a member of the New Day. Did you guys think there was some sort of fuck up, or whoever laid out the match wasn't thinking, or was it just to get over the Bullet Club for him to lay there 28 seconds on one move?
I think things were a little out of sync from what I understand. And when you do multi-man four-way matches, three-way matches, singles or tags or whatever, it's a clusterfuck. A lot of the talent involved with these matches, they groan because it can be a real difficult thing to put together. And the timing of the sequences when everything gets going and cooking and eliminating a team, putting them on the outside. And in this case, you just have to have so many people in the right spot, the right time. And God forbid someone's just a few seconds off and someone else is a few seconds off. Now you got a gap. Now you got a delay. And I think that kind of was that's why this match fell apart in that closing moment there.
But you know what? I think that that tag team match, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. I really thought that that's another spot where, you know, they could have, for example, in the match was New Day, right? And Bullet Club?
Yes, and Enzo and Cass.
Enzo and Cass and the Vaudevillains.
Yeah.
All those guys are over except the Vaudevillains. I would have given the title to the Vaudevillains and then done something with them.
Wow.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, because everybody in that match is over. The Bullet Club is over, and then now with AJ and fucking Enzo and Kaz are super over, and the other everybody's super over except the Vaudevillains.
Well, it's one of the tricky things too about when they brought in Enzo and Kaz as baby faces. They're over. New Day is over. I would have tried to keep them apart from each other until one of those teams was either going to go heel or you build to a big clash on a major show. What do you guys think about that when you've got a new babyface that's hot?
Yeah.
And there's an established babyface that's not in the way, but how do you guys like to navigate that as bookers to make sure that they don't interfere with each other?
No, well, you just keep them apart what I've done. I always, bro, the more people that are over, the better. It makes your job easier, you know? But yeah, we just keep them away from each other until there's a reason for them to be together.
And we haven't seen this guy in a little while, just to move away from Money in the Bank. Triple H has not been on TV. We've seen Stephanie and Shane instead. But Triple H does appear on Wale's new mixtape, Summer on Sunset. I heard the track that features Triple H at the end. Did you guys hear this? I actually thought it was a really good song. I've listened to it many times, and I'm really, even though I'm not a big hip hop fan, you know, we've been hanging with Wale a couple years, I'm really getting into his stuff.
Yeah, and I think he's going to have a new album out right after SummerSlam, probably looking at September. But yeah, Triple H appears on the end and leaves like a voicemail message, which Wale's had if you listen to his prior mixtapes, like Seinfeld will leave a message. In fact, he did on this mixtape as well. Jim Ross appears on this track as well. So, you know, it even, you know, in the title of the song, SmackDown, it's pretty much a shout out to everyone that loves wrestling.
And yeah, I always love like when the rappers shout out the wrestlers, and like right now there's humongous hip called Panda, I think is by Designer, and in there he has like this little line where it says something like you know, yeah, I'm real macho, oh yeah, I'm real macho like Randy, you know. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I always love those shout outs whenever you can find them. It's a great one. And Triple H kind of busts Wale's balls about having an internship at WWE Creative. That's a shoot, by the way. Wale, I can tell you, both sides, they're both aware, and it's like an ongoing rib, but Wale would love to be an intern, kind of like Kanye went, and when his passion's fashion, so he went out to Europe and was an intern, and Wale wants to do that, but with his passion, wrestling, and he would love to intern at WWE Creative. I'm like, if that happens, that's a great WWE Network show. That's all I'm going to say.
What exactly does an intern do?
Well, the creative team doesn't have interns right now. Like, you have writer's assistants, which is the closest thing to an intern, but you have a lot of responsibility, and it's a lot more than an intern.
So what does he want to know? Like, he wants learn the inner workings of the business from the behind the scenes?
He would love to contribute in any capacity. I think he, for just out of respect, would say, listen, I'd even intern, like, for free.
Right.
And would just show you that I want to start at the ground level, and whatever, however far I can get, it's on my own merits. But he just loved to intern.
Right.
He loves the business. He's wanted to book. He's wanted to promote. He's wanted to do those things. And I think at some point he will do those things. In which capacity? Who knows? Billy Corgan, not to compare him because they're totally different in so many ways, but he circled around wrestling since the 90s with ECW. Now he's a minority owner in TNA in 2016.
And apparently going to be a heel authority figure.
Of course. If you pay the price, why not become an authority figure? There's nothing played out about that, and it's weird. I hope he just wears the dramatic scarf in the middle of the summer for his heel promos. I mean, Jesus, what a cliche to be a heel authority figure, or maybe a babyface. I guess we'll see. But
it's just that, bro. I actually, I can't admit I'm admitting this on the air.
Oh boy!
But I actually watched TNA Impact.
You must have been very high.
I knew the reasons were. I knew that there was a reason the ratings were up 6%. I didn't even know that you got Pop TV.
Neither did I.
What did you think of the show?
Bro, it's like just you know. Here's the thing, bro. The people from within the company, and I have friends there, so I don't want to, you know. But it's like, of course, they're going to defend the product. They work there. What do you want them to do? Bury it? And you're definitely not going to bury it publicly. You know, and they'll always say stuff like, oh, yeah, well, the locker room isn't that bad. Okay, well, yeah, everybody in the locker room gets along and is happy. They're mostly young, you know, but come on, you know, but it's almost like they're a little bit in denial. But just right off the bat, the channel they're on, bro, looks like one of those old fucking, like, you know, Barker ads, like infomercial for a cutting knife or something like that, that like the quality is really bad. You know, that's just the commercials. And then when you – and JoJo commercials, you know. And then like remember those JoJo commercials TNA had back in the day? I think Larry was in one of them.
For Morphoplex.
Yeah, that. Remember
that?
Oh,
I can tell you so many stories about the Morphoplex scam guy.
Please,
oh,
please, please. We have all the time. I'm sure. Well,
this guy was so brilliant, and I won't say his name for legal reasons, but let's just say allegedly that there was a brilliant guy, criminal obviously, who would find a way – to get tons and tons of ad time on like major channels, because Morphoplex, like I'd be watching like an NBA game on the weekend and a Morphoplex commercial would come on. I'm assuming he would go through the local cable systems, buy this stuff, and rack up like millions of dollars in ads without putting any money down, just like on a credit line or just saying, I'll mail you a check, and then just never send the money.
And was this guy ever busted for this?
I don't know.
Closed the company down.
I don't know.
He owns 6% of TNA now.
Yeah, Larry still has a 20-year supply of Morphoplex in his closet.
What is Morphoplex?
It was some sort of supplement that, you know what, I've known a lot of wrestlers that have taken it just because Larry's given it to them for free, and they swore by it, so I'm not even saying it was a bad product. I'm just saying, like, yeah, you're right, Conan. I think some of these channels are so desperate for ad time that maybe they don't. You know, like, I watched a documentary recently about a guy that had no money and almost bought an NHL team. So if you can pull that off.
I saw that.
Yeah, I mean, so if you can pull that off, maybe it's not that hard to just get a bunch of TV ads and say, oh, the check's in the mail, fellas.
Yeah, bro, but at the end of the day, you know, the channel itself is weak. The commercials on it, you know, then the show comes on. And, you know, they're still doing that Jeff and Matt thing, which is super JoJo. And then just the show just looks like low rent. It just feels it. It's like on a low rent channel, you know. And, you know, they're not doing anything that, you know, okay, they say, yeah, they have a good work rate. Well, who really doesn't? You know, every promotion has a fucking good work rate. Is that what your calling card is? We have a better work rate than everybody else? Because you don't. And so the stories are like, big fucking deal, you know. It's nothing that there's nothing that I saw that I was like, wow, I want to come back and watch this. Even though when Bobby Lashley was in the ring and I think it was Drew Galloway, that did kind of catch my attention because I think what's his
Galloway's
guy's name?
Really good.
Yeah, and Lashley, bro, who has never talked, because even when he came, because you remember in WWE didn't talk, right, Court? Very little. And then when he came to TNA, but in TNA when he first came in and he came into that Beatdown Clan, MVP was doing most of the talking.
That's true. And Lashley was a guest on the VIP lounge at one point. And also in the early days of MLW Radio, Lashley was a guest. So if you haven't gone VIP yet, go to MLWRadio.com and sign up for just $1.99 a month and check out some of the cool episodes we've done with Lashley.
I will also say this. Vince at one point wanted to call him Silent but Deadly. And we're like, dude, you can't do that.
Right.
I swear it was at one point it was going to be – and we're like, I think it turned out to be like soft – spoken hard hitting instead. I'm like, well, that's a lot better than Silent but Deadly. Trust me. Yeah.
Now, exactly. Whoever said the rhyme did the crime could be his catchphrase. Why does Matt Hardy look like Mark Twain and Raven fucked and had an independent star baby?
Good point. I think there's some merch potential in that, though. Maybe even a spinoff story.
That's so, bro. That was so JoJo, and they're still doing that storyline. But at the end, they had and they had some girl they were interviewing on a chair. I got to see what her name was, and that she did a pretty good promo.
Was it the casting couch?
Is it like a chair, like a director's chair?
I don't know. I didn't see it.
Okay, so now
are you asking me if that's what the casting couch is? No, never mind.
No. I know what the casting couch is, but maybe that's what they were calling that in TNA. But so she did a good promo. But just seeing Galloway and Lashley face to face, and Lashley as a heel talking, because, you know, he can talk, and he was doing a good job. That was about the only thing that caught my attention, but it's still JoJo Dutch.
I want to bring this up real quick because we've seen the last few years coming out of WrestleMania and coming out of SummerSlam is usually when guys have their contracts lapse. It's also when WWE is looking to bring in new guys. They usually do tryouts and training camps in September and in April or May. So this September, it just came out. It was announced by his famous father, Jacques Rougeau, that Cedric Rougeau, and I saw the photos of him. I don't know if you guys saw it yet. He looks to be in incredible shape. 6'6", around 285 pounds.
He looks ferocious. I mean, I remember the Rougeaus at their prime, nothing like this guy. He looks like he was created in a like monster factory or something, not to be confused with actual wrestling school, but he's a big dude.
So he'll be getting a tryout in September. I haven't seen his work before, but he's young. He's 23, great shape. I think another one of Rougeau's students will be getting a tryout, Sebastian Desiel. I hope I pronounced that all right. So, you know, WWE is going to need more guys than ever with this brand split. So are we looking at a second-generation Rougeau in the company, you think?
I think this is the third or fourth, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. Probably the third generation.
Another thing I saw, speaking of the brand split, there was an article in Forbes magazine, and I don't know how accurate or inaccurate this was. Maybe you guys know. That WWE, because of the brand split, is interested in bringing back MVP, Carlito, Kurt Angle, John Morrison, Rey Mysterio, Bill Goldberg, all sorts of guys. I'm sure NXT guys are going to be coming up. So what's going to go down? You think any of these guys are going to come back? And what is the effect going to be on NXT if a bunch of their top stars get called up?
Well, I think this, if you bring in some of these guys, even if you bring half of these guys in, and I think I'd say about half of the names are accurate, maybe. It keeps the NXT roster kind of intact, theoretically, because it is a touring property now, and you don't want to all of a sudden have it cannibalized, yet it does serve a purpose, yet it's matured into something a little bit different than I think anyone had anticipated. But if you were to call up just one of those names like Shinsuke Nakamura, but keep Balor down there. Sorry, Finn. But you do have like MVP Carlito and maybe Bill Goldberg in the main roster. That really helps with the upcoming brand split. John Morrison is not going anywhere. He's tied up with Lucha Underground. Rey Mysterio is not going anywhere. He's tied up with Lucha Underground. Kurt Angle would be a surprise just because Kurt and WWE, I mean, he's made overtures since right around Dallas, WrestleMania weekend, yet nothing signed. But the brand split changed everything, just everything about the company and the complexion of it and their philosophy on outside talent and everything. So we'll see, but at least a few of those names are definitely hard no's, and that's Morrison and Mysterio in particular. So, but it's a great time to be a free agent and to be a Morrison Rey Mysterio if you had an opportunity to opt out of your contract, which I have no idea if they do or don't. You know, there's also breaches that could create some wiggle room. There's also Ricochet, who I believe is still a free agent.
But here's a good thing, because now they have leverage.
Yes.
And when you have leverage, you have everything. That's for the young people in the business. Remember that. If you have no leverage, you have basically nothing. So always good to have leverage, have other projects. While you're in WWE or while you're outside of WWE, you have a project. So when they call you, they know that, hey, I'm leaving this project to do this one. It's going to cost you this. Boom.
And I think for a lot of guys in WWE, we've seen before, the guys that are willing to walk away because they saved their money, even other projects don't have to necessarily be the leverage. How many times have we seen the fact that somebody wasn't a big spender was their leverage, and then WWE had to offer them even more to convince them to stay?
Well, any leverage is leverage, you know what I'm saying? So, but usually tangible tangible stuff is the shit that they notice. But that go ahead.
Well, just as far as Ricochet is concerned, you know, it's an interesting thing because there's been reports, and I don't know all the specifics, but reports of maybe as high as $300,000 being offered to Ricochet by Lucha Underground. And this is a key part of this, that the offer would be directly from the El Rey Network, not from Lucha Libre FMV, which I guess is the corporate structure of Lucha Underground. So that even if Lucha Underground went under, El Rey Network would still owe him the money. He could still take New Japan dates. Could this be a situation where literally WWE can't afford Ricochet?
I mean, you think about what if his base was $300,000 for a handful of TVs in LA, and then he can tour, say, 70%, 65% of the year in New Japan, international, indies, that could bump him up well another 100, north of 100, let's just say conservatively 100,000. He's at 400,000, and if you factor in gimmick money, merch money, I don't know how well he performs in that category. I don't know what his limitations are because of his Lucha Underground contract, but that may be another, say, it's just a very conservative, stupid conservative, like say 25,000.
Plus,
that's 425. So WWE, just to get in that conversation, has to offer somewhere in the ballpark of $500,000. Just to get him, and then wow, that's pretty shocking.
Let me tell you something that's very weird about this newer generation, but it's great though. They're very loyal to the people that helped them at the beginning. So I know for a fact that Trevor loves like to go to PWG. He loves to go like even well now he's in New Japan. He loves it there, but before that, bro, he loved Dragon Gate. And, you know, and I remember asking him, I go, because Flamita was the same way, you know, and I was like, well, and I know Sima, that's the guy that, you right. know, right, from when he used to wrestle in WCW and in Mexico. And he said, no, when we go down there, he goes, they just treat us like family. They treat us good. You know, I even helped put up the chairs and shit like that. And so, you know, he you know, just being treated good, man, you know, that's a big deal to them. So, I'm sure that him being able to wrestle New Japan and PWG and, you know, doing outside projects. And let's look at, for example, his roommate and his best friend is probably Apollo Crews, right? And, you know, he just made it to the main roster. And, you know, so he's probably thinking, I'm already here on the main roster. I don't have to go through NXT. I don't have to go through any politics. So, you know, I'm already a star here. And that actually was one of the selling points when I was trying to, you know, recruit him to Lucha Underground. I go, bro, one of the best things, you don't have to go through NXT or that system, get lost in there. You go straight to the main roster. So maybe those things are appealing to him too.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the WWE World Cruiserweight Classic. The tapings are going to be kicking off this Thursday in Orlando. Most of the 32 Cruiserweight Classic participants are already in Orlando for the tapings. Some of them are undergoing blood tests and physicals this week. WWE has reportedly brought in some extra talents just in case they need replacements in the tournament. Another thing I think is interesting is this 205-pound weight limit is being very strictly enforced.
I like
that. A very, very sport-like presentation for the tournament is expected. Another thing that's interesting, if we look historically in the history of pro wrestling, for fans that get confused by the different terminology, cruiserweight and junior heavyweight are it's the same weight division. You know, when it was created in boxing, some organizations called it junior heavyweight, some call it cruiserweight. So it's the same division. And so historically, that division in wrestling was actually 220. The 205, that's a UFC-created weight class. That was never a wrestling weight class. Wrestling was 220 and 190. So do you think the 205 is a deliberate attempt because of the popularity of UFC and 205 being one of their money divisions for so long? The WWE is kind of aping the UFC weight class when that was never a wrestling weight class ever.
You know, if it is, good idea and good point.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I didn't realize that. I like that they have alternates that they're bringing because there's a good chance someone's going to ding a knee or twist an ankle or something, God forbid, worse, to have some alternates down there. But actually to book it where someone does that is a plausible out so they can't advance but they didn't get beat, and then bring someone even, you know, 1-2-3 kid style that looks good even in losing, and you have them as an added attraction in the tournament. So there's a lot of cool things. I'm really intrigued to see how they book this, how they produce this, and how they pump it out on the WWE Network creatively, and then how do they keep people up to speed on it on the main shows, on SmackDown, on Raw, because that's important to promote and cross-market this. It's a great selling point for the network, but they got to make it a priority in their marketing in their marketing efforts. If they don't, it's kind of like it just exists out there in the WWE Network space.
See those little things like that 205, that, you know, which would make a really good correlation. Those little things, I ain't afraid. Those little things right there is what makes NXT so special, and it almost makes me think, okay, so if Vince wasn't there, is this what WWE would look like? Because that's the product I like.
Yeah, it's produced by a different team. It's got a different creative team. Some of the agents cross over. Michael Hayes will produce. But you also have guys like Norman Smiley, who you can speak to, and his amazing abilities as a talent and as a coach. He coached a lot of MLW guys when I was around, or when he was
and
around.
And Norman
MLW.
Smiley is not afraid to always be walking around forever and ever, no matter what temperature it is or what year you see him in soccer shorts and an England soccer top.
Very short shorts, uncomfortably short shorts. Like he just doesn't give a shit.
Like those old school tennis shorts, remember?
Basketball shorts. Yeah, it's like 1975 style shorts. Like, I don't even know where you would buy those things. I don't know if he's wearing like youth shorts.
Bro, he actually wore that to Wally Mania.
I know. He's like, it's hot in Dallas.
How was that?
I like how you were walking around. It's like, yo, see that guy? That's Warren Moon. He came out to Wally Mania. Well, one guy that actually debuted in NXT recently was La Sombra, who has a new alter ego as Cien Almas Andrade. I'm probably butchering his name. Cien Almas. He wrestled Ty Dillinger on NXT June 15th. Kone, did you get a chance to see his new persona?
Yeah, I saw it. First, that name is super brutal. They need to change
it. I just killed it even worse, unfortunately.
That's okay, but you know, we expect that from you. But the other thing is, he's got a great look. He's a great wrestler. Somebody said his English was better than I been led to believe, but that's good too. And for whatever reason, and I don't watch NXT all the time, mm-hmm. I don't hardly at all, but I did see that match, and it just seemed like the people like the other guy more, you know, and like he's like maybe a crowd favorite, I don't know, or was he supposed to be a heel? I don't think he was, because he was doing it.
Yeah, he's a baby. Ty Dillinger, it's kind of has this thing where, you know, he does the 10-10 and the crowd goes along with it. I thought, you know, once he was in the ring, his look was great. Not mm-hmm. a big fan of the pre-match attire, the entrance attire. It's like yep. Chip and Dale style with like a yep. Godfather pimp hat with the feather. Yep. It doesn't connect. And if yep. he doesn't feel main event potential, it feels mid-card right. or opening card.
Very hokey. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
point.
This,
I forgot about that. That was a point I wanted to make, too.
He has main event potential. If he can really master the English language, he really can cross over. He has unbelievable ability. I definitely recommend checking some of his Arena Mexico work out, because those are anniversary shows. He really would crush it. His New Japan work was awesome, too. If he can just get away from that shtick and just be presenting himself in a more main event capacity in terms of yeah. how he looks when he comes out, it sets the tone. Because if you see someone coming out in that kind of attire, you're like, oh, curtain jerker. You're just in your mind mentally, you're just categorizing him as, in that capacity. When you see him wrestle, it's a totally different thing.
Bro, that's why I always give Kevin Owens so much credit, you know, when he comes out. Because he reminds me of like the husband from, remember that show, Roseanne?
John Goodman?
Yeah.
Damn?
Something like that, you know, like just some fucking slob that fucking didn't even fucking take the time to fucking get dressed for a show, you know, like an indie worker or a fuck, bro. He looks like, you know, Habib the car washer would be.
Whoa, hey.
And bro, and then he goes out there and he's charismatic. He's fire on the motherfucking mic.
Yes.
He's witty, bro, and he can fucking go.
Mm-hmm.
He's one guy that can get away with that look. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule, yeah. and he's so talented. And you know what? I'll say this, too. He looked like in recent times he had been improving his physique, Kevin Owens. Then it kind of feel like, oh, maybe he kind of slides a little bit. Then he'll improve a little bit. So it's not a gradual thing.
Bro, I love the fact that we have a Kevin Owens or yeah. we have a Dean Ambrose. That he does not look physically intimidating to me at all. But he does get the crazy factor over, which is what he's trying to do. And, you know, there are a lot of guys that aren't physically imposing. And so that's great for the business. We finally got away from that bodybuilding shit.
But fewer and fewer people are watching. And I don't want to sound like a negative.
And you think the physiques is part of that?
I do think it is. And I don't want to sound like a negative Nancy. But I do think
that's a valid point.
For people in the business, like we're in the bubble and the product that is being shown – you know, we watch the show and we go, wow, Dean was one of the best guys on the show. Kevin Owens was one of the best guys on the show. And yet, I do think that guys with that look, I don't know if that's what the average casual person thinks of as a heavyweight champion of the world. And, you know, it's nothing against Dean or Kevin Owens, but we look at what happened with Hot Potatoing the title from going to Seth to going to Dean. Dean is the heavyweight champion of the world. The average person flipping through the channels, he's wrestling in jeans and a tank top. And then on top of that, he hasn't beaten any of the top stars either, you know, because
go ahead.
Just because we've kind of segregated this thing where for whatever reason, the biggest stars are nowhere near the belt, you know, Brock and Triple H and The Rock, The Undertaker and so on and so forth. So I just want to make sure we don't lose sight of that, you know,
I wanted to make a point, and please tell me what you both think on this. And so I grew up, even though, you know, we're apart in ages, but I grew up in an era where physiques really didn't matter that much. And then when I got in the business, that's what it was all about. And then you kind of grew up in the business where physiques was a big part of it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe, and I'm just saying maybe, all the people that grew up and physiques was part of the charm or the allure or whatever – and maybe those people left, but now we're going through this transitional period where in 15 years, it's going to be normal, you know, and a lot of kids won't grow up, you know, thinking you have to look like a fucking, you know, like John Cena to get over, and you can look like fucking Dean Ambrose. You know what I'm saying?
If you go further back before WWE really turned it into like a bodybuilding thing,
right,
with the Ultimate Warrior and Hogan, even before that,
everybody,
the main event guy still had, I've talked about it all the time, had this thickness to them. They weren't cut and super muscular the way the 80s steroids guys were. Bro. But when you thought of the heavyweight champion, he still had this certain thickness and brawn to him,
right?
That a lot of these newer guys don't have. Like, we, you know, we look at Baron Corbin, who they're still pushing right now. He picked up the win on the pay-per-view over poor Dolph Ziggler. And his body, you know, he has the height, but I always say the thickness is more important than the height. His body looks weird. He's got this strange navel. And I want to give a shout-out to a fan on Twitter. We had a impromptu contest of who could Photoshop Baron Corbin's navel the best. If anybody didn't see this, at Rad Pitt underscore.
I would like to say that my favorite one was the one with Quattro.
Yeah, the Quattro one was great.
Awesome.
Total Recall throwback. Yeah. It was Party Jannetty at Rad Pitt underscore killed.
How awesome
it.
Would it be if it's actually Marty Jannetty? Using that name.
He definitely would prefer people call him Party Jannetty from, well, if you saw him in Dallas a few months ago, he was doing the backstroke in the hotel waterfall.
That's awesome.
Baron Corbin's navel is like 6 miles wide. I don't know what's going on there, but some people speculate it was a C-section. I don't think so. He's a male. But that being said, this dude, Party Jannetty, did like a animated GIF, I don't know how you pronounce it, never have, but it morphs his navel into the sad Jordan face. It's amazing. I mean, he
did a great job.
Yeah, so we hooked him up because of that with a free lifetime VIP membership because it was just so inspiring.
And
for
just
us
to show you that we're in a giving mood,
yes,
we're also going to send you over, and this we haven't sent over in a long time, so please regarded as something out of the ordinary, the chive sour cream and baba ganoush tea bag from MSL.
Wow. We're pulling out all the stops.
And if you enjoy it, rate us on Yelp. We want a 5-star rating on Yelp for that. So, you know, we're looking for the high ratings on Yelp. So one thing I noticed on the WWE promotion for Money in the Bank and for Raw was the Battleground promo spot. Did you guys see that?
Oh, with the flags?
Yes.
Yes, I did see that.
What was your take? What was your takeaway on it?
I mean, it seemed to me to be that the whole show is going to revolve around that the draft just happened, right? And now there's going to be all these new alliances and new feuds. And I thought it was a pretty cool commercial. Seemed a little strange. I don't know if they're maybe going to do a flag match. We haven't seen one of those
in a while. Capture the flag. That would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, at times they have some of the best spots that they're very memorable. I remember when we did the Royal Rumble spot one year. I think it was for Miami. And you see the McMahon family, they're dressed like they're in like Roman togas. And we actually shot it in Yonkers, New York, like in the middle of, I want to say, November, and the leaves are off the trees and everything. It was a real tight shot on this really old columns and everything in the middle of this park, kind of in the hood in Yonkers, New York, and the McMahon family's all there, and they got the togas and everything, and it's amazing in post-production how they can make that look bright and cheery when it was, you know, a dreary day in November, and, you know, everyone's freezing wearing togas, but the WWE, when they're on with spots, no one can touch them. One thing I wanted to get your take on, MSL, was a recent deal involving Ring of Honor and Kevin Sullivan popping up in a vignette with Steve Corino.
Yeah, this mysterious appearance out of the shadows. You know, I'm definitely going to have to ask Kevin about that this Friday on MSL and Sullivan.
Dressed?
He, you know, he just looked the way that Kevin would look if you ran into him these days.
He's got like his crabbing outfit.
Yeah, you know, well, yeah, I mean, it's crab season. You can only last 6 weeks. You got to get as much crab as you can.
A lobster crab match is coming to Ring of Honor.
You spend this many decades in the business where getting crabs is a bad thing. I'm sure it's got to be nice to finally be a good thing. So you got to enjoy that. No, I want to see
how awesome would it have been if he would have just walked out of the fucking shadows with one of those fucking full monk suits, you know, with the little
I would have been completely in favor of that.
Yes. Okay,
so I'm curious, you know, to see if he gets more involved. I know Steve Corino's got this feud going on with BJ Whitmer, and we'll just have to see what happens.
Will the devil on Steve Corino's shoulder as a heel manager be Kevin Sullivan? To me, that's a hell of a deal.
I would love it, man. I'll be watching like everybody else to see what happens.
Now, is Kevin still living in an island off of Seattle or something?
Yeah, he's living.
So
on
they're
an
flying
island.
Him all the way from there just for one shot, or is he going?
No,
be?
I don't know what he's doing. I know, because he had just gotten back. He was gone for a couple weeks. He had just done a bunch of shows on the East Coast,
right?
And he's just settling in. So I don't know what the plan is. I would hope to see him get more involved, because if anybody was going to have a devil on their shoulder, who better than Kevin Sullivan?
Well, frankly, I'll just say this. Kevin Sullivan, if I was Joe Koff, I'd pick his brain, because Ring of Honor needs a shot in the arm in the creative department. Even if he isn't your day in and day out guy, to have him consult, advise, be a consigliere, any and all of these things would be of great value, because he knows how to create characters, appealing matchups, and he was the booker that kind of gave WCW 95 a shot in the arm and went from being hokey to being something a little bit more credible. And it didn't happen radically overnight, but he started very slowly and gradually transitioned that product into being a viable national product, which is kind of what Ring of Honor needs. They got great talent. But, I mean, how many three-ways and four-ways that don't have any heart and soul to them? Show me the money angles they've shot, the money promos they've shot that have triggered big business and popped houses. To me, in my personal opinion, just my opinion, maybe an educated opinion because I was with the company for a bit, they are artificially propped up by an incredibly talented New Japan roster. They've done their biggest performance in terms of box office with New Japan. Take that out of the equation, they're in a little bit of trouble. I submit to you, have great talent, but they haven't really packaged them, presented them as stars, made them break out as stars. Other companies, I feel, have done a masterful job of that in recent times. I'm no longer with Lucha Underground, but I'll put them over as saying they did a very good job of effectively getting over multiple people over the span of a short period of time, like Pentagon, like Drago, et cetera, and now those guys are in hot demand across the U.S. And remember, El Rey's not in every household in the United States. It's in a very few. Ring of Honor's in a lot more. They have 60-some-odd affiliates across the United States due to the Sinclair Broadcasting Group's owned and operated network stations. And I would say you should be a lot more high profile as a company and in terms of your roster than you are. And you look at the regimes now more than ever, they seem to be so calcified from TNA, which has had the same creative regime. Ring of Honor, same creative regime. They used to be, you had these regimes, they didn't get results, they were out. Maybe Ring of Honor just feels that they're fooled by the New Japan boost, and they think that that's on them and they're creative. But I'd submit to you, it's a lot more because of New Japan than it's on the actual booking. But that's just my take.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, because obviously he actually brought me into WCW. So, you know, the guy's brilliant, man, and he's a guy that started that. I think we're all in agreement, we'll never see this happen again, but beating WWE 52 weeks in a row. Right. And, you know, he set the table for all of that. And he's brilliant at building heat. I used to watch him when I was a kid in Miami. He was such an effective heel. And even though he was small, his shit always looked effective. But that's besides the point. The amount of wisdom that you're going to get from him, very few guys have it. He's been a successful booker. And plus now, being away from the business, and still he wants to learn. You know, he's still learning and he's still keeping up with the product. And he's got these great ideas that I'm sure could take, you know, ROH to the next level. So,
Yeah. I mean, when you have access to a Jake the Snake Roberts or a Kevin Sullivan or any of these guys, why wouldn't you want access to them? So if you have access to Kevin Sullivan, why not pick his brain? And we'll see. You know, I would hope that Ring of Honor, Joe Koff, would elect to do so, or maybe not. And you know, Kevin tragically doesn't participate in such a unique opportunity, which I think is a win-win for everyone. And it's not like Kevin would probably go in there looking, I want the book, brother. He, at this point in his life, he probably would want to just be able to contribute, and as maybe, like I said, a consigliere. And that's not something he's advocating for. He's just coming in and just making a date. He's doing this and loves, you know, the idea. And I understand, you know, cool and everything with Carino, so it's not like he's making a play or anything. I'm just saying, God damn, someone make a fucking play, Beak Sullivan or anyone, anyone out there. I don't care, but I think that the product, the talent there, they could do so much more with what they have. You don't have to blow up that roster. That roster is fucking rocking. It's how they utilize them and how they could take them to the next level, because it doesn't have the buzz unless New Japan is in the equation. And another, you know, talking about Cumbie's just trying to make a go of it. Classic Wrestling Revolution. Shane Douglas recently, I guess, went on record saying that they are they're going to take a little bit more time. They're regrouping. They're going to they're delayed by about 3 to 6 months for several reasons, including the death of up to three, not one, not two, but three of their funding partners. I don't know what happened there, but. Classic Wrestling Revolution, still trying to get something going, still trying to find, I think, additional financing as Bill Towson took to Facebook and pitched the fans on possibly owning a piece of the company about a month ago. What do you guys take on the realities of wrestling and doing a startup in this company in particular?
Well, I mean, for the stuff that was publicly reported, I guess I can comment on. I don't have any.
I don't think they have the money to sue you at this point, my brother.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how long NDAs are valid for.
Not read yours?
I don't know if I have a copy of mine. It's been so many years that it might have been shredded at some point. You know, things get delayed sometimes for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. The public report did say that.
Wait a minute. This thing's been a project for 7 years?
No, I mean, maybe it's been. Three, I don't know. It's been a while,
right?
And apparently, they're claiming they've spent like $36 million on virtual reality technology,
right?
And that is the delay.
I think that's actually a virtual reality thing.
Right? Yeah. Well, that's the thing. The company is going to take place in a virtual reality. That's the reason that nobody's been there yet. So, I don't want to be the negative guy. I'm going to be optimistic.
Please be negative for a second.
I'm going to be optimistic and just say that we'll just wait patiently. And if they say that they've spent $36 million on, you know, four-dimensional seats, then I believe them.
So and if you signed an NDA, that means that you were contacted by them, right?
I don't know. I don't know if I signed an NDA. It's been so long. I have no recollection of anything.
Wow. Tremendous. Okay.
Well, let me ask you, Conan. You've mentioned before that you've met with these guys.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you believe it, or are the fans going to be sitting in seats where Silent But Deadly is just leaking out of the seats? You're right in the action.
Is that everything we've gotten from them just seems hokey, man? You know, fucking from that video that he did where he had problem turning it off, to the fact that three people just died, to the fucking, you know, they got the, you know, it just... And you're going to do it in a Las Vegas parking lot underneath a tent? Come on. So I don't know. If you don't got something like positive to say, don't throw that out there. I think it just makes you look – you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I'm having a lot of problems believing this at this juncture. And I was contacted by them. Boom.
I did see the AAA postponed Verano de Escandalo. I'm horrible with Spanish pronunciations.
Minus
I apologize to our great Spanish listeners. That maybe they're saving it for October. I don't know. You know, that translates, I believe, to Summer of Scandal. I don't know how you could do the Summer of Scandal in the fall. I guess that would make it very scandalous that it's in the wrong season.
No, it's something AAA would just do.
So what's going on with this Summer of Scandal?
This would actually fall under a group that me, Raven, and Jericho were in called – triumvirate of what was it? Useless Trivia.
Yes.
And so Verano de Escándalo is actually a word I came up with, which is, yeah, Scandalous Summer, because he wanted a name for all of his big shows, and it was for the summer, exactly. And, you know, they're just very unorganized. It doesn't, you know, a lot of it isn't seen in public, and some of it hasn't caught up to them. But, like, we saw a big thing they did last year. We had Rey de Reyes. I think it was the first big show of the year, in a place that was open. You know, you're taking your chances that it can rain. And it did. Ugh. So the show got canceled. Everybody had to stay there an extra day. Some people were sent back on a bus to Mexico, which is where this lady that had been working there for like 20 years passed away. And another guy lost his leg. They never took care of them. But and so then the next day was a holiday, so we couldn't get any permits to do the show. So we had to do it the next day. And so, okay, again, just bad planning on their part. Then if you remember how terrible those house shows were when they did those house shows where they brought in like Magnus and who was it? Low Key and MVP. Remember those shows that they jacked up the ticket prices really high and nobody went to? All right. So that was so completely unorganized. Also, and bro, they lost a lot of money there. Then we go to last year, we were going to do Guerra de Titanes in a place called Tampico. Bro, in Tampico, you have to get permission from the right people. And they didn't. So that was canceled.
What can you tell me about this show? I don't know if it's a AAA spinoff show to do some business in Colombia. It's a series called... I don't know why I always get asked to read the Spanish stories where I'll butcher the pronunciations.
So let me finish. So Guerra de Titanes was the last big show of the year, and they had to move that from, I think it was November to September. And now this show, they waited really, really, really late to do publicity, and it was too late because you need about a month of publicity, and they were going to start doing it like 15 days in. Or 13 days in. And so now again, that got canceled. That's just being unorganized. Yeah, Colombia, they went to Colombia. They did great business in Colombia. So now they want to go over there and they want to start a TV show and they want to start touring there because South America is very virgin. When I went to Bolivia and Chile, it was ridiculous. I told you guys about it when I came on the podcast. And now we're about to go to Peru with Hugo Savinovich, and that's going to be off the chain. And so South America is really virgin right now, which WWE, thanks to them, they've heated that up for us, and they can't be everywhere at the same time. So it's a hot territory. So they're probably going to go to Colombia and do good business, real good business.
Before we run out of time, I do want us to talk about Raw real briefly because, you know, it happened last night. It's a long, long show. I do have a few notes. Because and this has been a very eye-opening thing for me. I have recently made sure every week to watch Raw with my chick, who's very, very casual fan. But she grew up in a small town, and, you know, I feel like when I watch Raw with her, I'm getting, like, the reaction you would get from the normal fan because everybody else in my life is so entrenched in the wrestling business.
Now, can I ask you a question real quick? How long does it usually take her to go, this sucks, or I can't believe you're watching this, or does she fucking sit there for 3 hours and put up with that?
Keep in mind, when I watch Raw, there's a lot of fast-forwarding, so she only has to sit there for maybe 90 minutes.
Oh, so you're not watching it live?
No, I always do DVR. Okay. Like, I'll start it Monday at 11. You know, we'll get home from bowling on Monday at 11, and we'll put on Raw. And her observations are always fascinating to me because they make so much sense, but it's just the natural reaction. So, you know, we're watching Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and it was a great match, don't get me wrong, and they had incredible matches all over the world before they even went to WWE. But her just gut reaction is, do they not have enough wrestlers? We've seen this match 100 times, and I do think that is, you know, we've talked about it before, one of the major problems on the shows right now. Maybe the brand split will help alleviate this a little bit. As they bring in more guys, but same matches over and over, and I know it's because they've got to fill 3 hours. But when you guys watch the show this week, to me, the 3 hours is hurting more than ever. What is the solution? Will the brand split help this in some way?
It all depends. You know, you look at what's the roster going to look like. Who are those guys that are going to actually get signed that used to be in the company? How many will they bring on? And how long will they go with it? And also losing Roman Reigns, like we talked about, the top, that impacts everything because either he's your top heel or your top babyface for Monday Night Raw. And with him not being there for the next 30 days, he comes back on the flip side of the pay-per-view of the draft. But it's like an almost anticlimactic 30 days in that you've lost a big piece of this. Now, when he comes back, he can make a big impact. It could be a shocking return. Maybe they hold off a week, whatever. But when you look at the rosters, you know, a few wellness test violations, an injury here and there, and that. Look at Randy Orton. Look, all these guys are just coming back now. It's not their first or second or third injuries. It's a reality of the business. And when you have two rosters and you have a 3-hour Monday, 2 hours Tuesday, It's going to be a very challenging few months for them. But if they can stabilize, it can really create some new opportunities for new talent, for old talent to come back in to contribute. To look at Goldust, I mean, a guy that really still can go, who is a great teacher, a great player slash coach, and the roster and the fans are enriched for having a guy like that on the shows instead of just having all new talent.
Let me ask you a question: would you, to both of you, would you have now Reigns go heel with Seth Rollins and go after Dean, or would you have Seth and Ambrose switch and now Ambrose and Seth Rollins are baby faces?
I like two heels being the obstacle for a baby face, and right. For Dean Ambrose to have to fight from underneath, because he's better fighting from underneath. He can't right. be dominant. And I think having Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, either if it starts as like let's agree to team up and take this guy out, and you have that evil vibe, and then over time they gel and you go, it's more of an organic union after right. a while. I think that would be the way to go. I still think there's so much money left on the table from a babyface shield run, but we're far from that now. We can't just do that now.
But you could still prolong that, because you could still have Roman Reigns and the other one as Seth Rollins as a heel when the time is right. Seth Rollins Reigns turns babyface, and then boom, and then all three of them finally reunite. So you got a lot of mileage on this.
Yes.
And last thing before we go, I thought this was kind of cool, and it did get some media attention when the Cleveland Cavaliers, fresh off winning the NBA World Championship, when they landed at the airport in Cleveland, LeBron James comes off the plane wearing an Ultimate Warrior t-shirt. Right after the game, I was watching SportsCenter, and they interviewed Kevin Love, and he was wearing a Austin 316 t-shirt. I don't know if this was some planned thing amongst the players that with all this huge media attention as the new champions, they were just going to constantly put over WWE. What do you guys make of this?
It makes the product look cool, and it makes WWE look even cooler, because they're not doing it. They're not talking about TNA or Ring of Honor or Lucha Underground. They're talking about WWE, and Kevin Love was doing the 316, hitting the fucking beer together and shit. And I saw a picture of LeBron James the night before, the game before, with an Undertaker shirt on.
Right.
So it just makes a product. How cool would it be that WWE sent them those shirts and sent them some money to wear it? But that would be genius.
Well, I'll tell you this. LeBron and also KD, but LeBron is a huge wrestling fan and, in fact, has sent, signed mementos to Jim Ross. And Jim Ross in his house, he's got a ton of, LeBron stuff. LeBron's a huge wrestling fan. So is KD, like I said. And I know from Wale, I connected with both of them, and I have firsthand knowledge. They're huge fans, huge wrestling fans. So they're just showing love, and I think that's so cool to see wrestling. Because wrestling, let's be honest, there's definitely times and places like we talked about ADR and Paige, where you can get ridiculed for being in the business or being a fan and passionate about it. So it's really cool to see some of the biggest, most high profile people in sports, champions. Celebrate wrestling
Kevin
and show
Love.
Immediately
he had a championship belt. I don't think he brought it with him. I don't know who gave it
WWE's,
to him.
WWE's, they move fast on that.
Bro, fucking kudos.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And it's just great to see wrestling. And some people say wrestling is in a sense of a state of contraction. Look at all these companies. Some aren't.
Which, I mean, it is. I mean, they're not wearing Roman Reigns t-shirts. I mean, they're wearing guys whose heyday was 1990.
Yeah, no, but that's let me tell you that, though. That there is a big movement. I can tell you, there's a store in LA that sells just strictly retro WWF swag from the early 90s, Ultimate Warrior jackets and shit like that. That's Wale got a jacket, a Warrior jacket that's a Varsity style jacket from 1991. Never been worn anything like that. And they sell for a premium. Pete Rosenberg is constantly rocking retro 1995 WWF shirts that look ridiculous, but they're funny because they're throwback shirts. They're not new shirts, but they're vintage shirts that are new or worn once kind of things, and there's a huge market, underground market for that shit. So
and what's so cool, bro, is whether it's Wale or whoever, KD or whoever it is, Shaquille, it's just cool because they're showing love. And I hate, like, for example, I'll give you an example. The other day I was watching Bill Maher, and he was making a correlation between, like, the Republican fan base.
Oh, he brought up the folding chairs, yeah.
Yeah, and the pro wrestler. It's almost like all the pro wrestling fans are, Republicans. And of course, they got a huge pop. And he goes, yeah, and they even have folding chairs at the conventions or whatever the fuck he was saying. But again, he like looked down at it where, all these other guys are like, fuck it. It's entertaining and it makes the product cool.
Absolutely. And, it's one of those things where I think I'm conflicted. I don't know really if wrestling is a true sense of contraction where people are just consuming it in unique ways that's non-traditional. They're DVRing it, streaming it.
Or they're listening to us talk about it instead of watching it.
No, not only that, bro. Look how huge it is. When I go there, I always say this. Every time I go to SmackDown, I'm just blown away of the scope of the whole thing because not being there and seeing it, you sometimes – forget how huge they are, and they're still making money, and they always will. They're going to go through evolutions, or some people aren't going to like where they're going, but it's where they're going, just like music, just like anything else. A lot of times, I like the rap from my era. Well, people today, a lot of them think the rap that I like sucks, and they like the rap of today, so who's right? I don't like country music. A lot of motherfuckers making music money off of that shit, so at the end of the day, are they making money? Yes, bro, and they're the far and away, by far, the most recognizable wrestling product on the planet.
And here's another thing.
I love country music, and Kyle Petty is the king. And they say I'm a redneck, but I say it's a beautiful thing.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Let me just say this, because I meant to plug – thank you. I meant to plug this earlier, but I can tell you that for a fact, Wale is teaming up with Scott Hall SummerSlam weekend for something very special. We're going to have news on it later in the week on MLW Radio, the MLW Radio Network, so stay tuned. But if you're in New York that weekend, it's going to be a lot of fun. So just stay tuned to see what they got cooking, and that's all I have for us.
And let's let people know a few things before we go, because I want to let everyone know there's a new VIP lounge.
Let me just say real quick before you throw that little last thing. Just real quick. I know you saw them, so I'll ask you first. Hopefully you did, Court. What did you think of the O.J. Simpson special?
Oh, incredible. Part 5 was my favorite by far, but they were all amazing.
I loved
it. What was your takeaway? What was your – seeing this, because nobody had ever filmed them this way or this in-depth – what was your takeaway watching that?
Well, I mean, I watched the trial every day as a kid, and I've seen so many documentaries about it that there was very little new info until part 5, which dug so deep into his life post-trial. I had no idea he had been living in Miami and Vegas and all the crazy partying and everything that he did after he was found not guilty. That was by far my favorite. But I think watching it, there's – and for so much of my life, there was this debate of, did you think he did it? And the evidence was so overwhelming. I never had a doubt in my mind. And I hope now that, his friends have gone public saying he admitted it and all this stuff, that maybe anyone that had any shred of doubt can finally just lay this to rest. There should be no doubt.
What do you think, Court?
It was fascinating. It was brilliant. It was a masterpiece in how they did it. I mean, you go from the FX version with John Travolta, and then you contrast it with this, which was kind of like the Netflix-style show where they documented the Wisconsin murders. It was exceptional. It's easily the best work ESPN has ever done, which covers a lot of ground. It was really well done. I'm up to part 4. I haven't gotten to part 5 yet, but I was kind of like just stunned by how graphic some of the footage of
I had to turn away.
Well, I just didn't expect it. When you see like the thing come up saying, notice the following the material will be very graphic. I'm like, with some blood, whatever. Oh my God, I was not prepared for that. I'm not squeamish, but they did not pull any punches on this. So if you guys haven't watched it and you want to watch it, just make sure there's no kids in the room, or if you're squeamish, you might want to be careful on episode 4, because it's no joke. That was graphic stuff.
Yeah, that was for me, since I grew up watching him, And I and just seeing just, you know, all the factors that led to the jury basically, you know, voting against him. A lot of it was racial and a lot of it was you're a bunch of dumbasses, you know. And so, you know, there was no doubt. I followed it just like UM every single day. There was no doubt in my mind. Bro, there was one thing I'll never forget it. It said something like there's a 1 in 7 billion chance that this is his fingerprint. And there were like at that time 5 billion people on Earth or 6 billion. And I was like, well, bro, right there, that's telling you it is. But you know, they were able to. Okay, I don't want to go all into it. But at the end, this is what I thought. It was very sad, bro, what he had turned into from what he was. You know, just very sad. And
Well, no, finish your thought. I'm sorry.
No. And then the last thing that I wanted to say is one last thing. Do you think, M, that them suspending Green, hoping it would go seven, is this
for sure? It would have been over in five. There's no doubt that if the series had been tied 2-2, he wouldn't have been suspended. And then in game six, the fouls on Curry. And I don't want to sound like a hater. I had very little interest in who won. I just wanted an entertaining series. But the officiating to me has gotten to the point where I can't suspend my disbelief anymore. I want to just sit as a fan and just pretend that it's real, but it's becoming very difficult.
Yeah, very true. Okay, I just want to say one thing real quick. You can get my mask at luchashop.com. Go ahead, boom.
And I want to let everybody know there's a new VIP lounge with MVP. It's out right now, catching up with Santino Marella. We've got part two in the history of the making series, looking at Dusty Rhodes, covering 1980 to 2015. That drops this Thursday, exclusively for VIP subscribers and also for VIP listeners. We've got a new writer's room with Greeny, Ed Farah, and Jimmy Havoc. You want to check that out tomorrow. And here's a big one to look out for as well as we start a new chapter of MLW Radio. Next week, Dave Bautista stops by for a huge writer's room. Go VIP right now by going to mlwradio.com. Click the red button at the top, and just for $1.99 a month, you can go VIP and hear all these exclusive shows every week and every show we've ever done, the complete archive. And we also now take PayPal. What are you waiting for? It's a hell of a deal.
And I'll just add this, when it comes to Bautista, I talked to him. He told me he is not going to hold back. So be ready. Shots will be fired, I think. That being said, everyone, check out MSL on Twitter, at MSL.
And Instagram. Hell
there
yeah.
You go. Okay. Conan's on Twitter and Facebook, at Conan5150. Check out his Facebook. He has some amazing stuff. And even if you don't speak Spanish, read Spanish, click the translate button that's right there on the Facebook page, and you can read everything in your glorious language of your preference. Probably English, since you're listening to this podcast. And I'm on Twitter at Court Bauer and Instagram at Court Bauer. And for the OG3, we are out.